This Morning, America's First News, starts right after this.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to GEICO. GEICO could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to GEICO.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This Morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Too close to call. Good morning. I'm Jennifer Kashinka in for Gordon Deal, along with Rasa Kay on this Wednesday, August 8th. Here's what we have for you this hour.
President Trump claims victory in a key Ohio congressional vote, but the race for the House seat has been deemed too close to call by the Associated Press.
California Governor Jerry Brown calls the devastating wildfires tearing through Northern California a new normal.
President Trump's former personal attorney, Michael Cohen, is under investigation for his personal business affairs and his work on behalf of the president.
And the impact of calorie counting menus on our restaurant decision making.
The good news is that calorie counting menus do appear at certain types of restaurants to help diners, you know, keep, you know, health in mind when choosing what they eat. But the bad news is that the effect of that is somewhat limited.
Jacob Passy of Market Watch will be here in about 20 minutes with that story. Republican Troy Balderson claimed a razor-thin victory in an Ohio House district that President Trump won by 11 percentage points in 2016, but the Associated Press says the race is too close to call. According to unofficial results, Balderson leads Democrat Danny O'Connor by 17,000 votes, but there are over 3,400 provisional ballots and 5,000 absentee ballots outstanding. State law forbids counting those ballots until August 18th. The provisional and absentee ballots could push the margin below 0.5%, which would trigger an automatic recount under Ohio law. Balderson says he looks forward to campaigning this fall when the two will square off again in November to determine who will serve a full 2-year term in Congress.
America is on the right path, and we're going to keep it going that way.
O'Connor didn't concede during remarks to supporters in Westerville, Ohio.
We went house to house. We made our case for change. We're going to make that case tomorrow. We're not stopping now. Tomorrow we rest, and then we keep fighting through to November.
The closely watched Republican gubernatorial primary in Kansas is also headed to a photo finish, with Kris Kobach, the state's controversial Secretary of State, running neck and neck against Governor Jeff Collier. In Michigan, former state representative Rashida Tlaib won the Democratic nomination to run unopposed in November for a House seat. She would become the first Muslim woman in Congress. And in Missouri, a proposed right-to-work law was defeated 66-33%. It would have ended a requirement that private sector workers had to join a union or pay a fee if their workplace was unionized. President Trump struck a more conciliatory tone over California's raging wildfires, saying he is in constant contact with officials there a day after blaming the state's environmental policies for exacerbating the fires.
We're deeply grateful to our incredible firefighters and first responders. They're really brave people. I've been watching them going to areas where very few people would go, and some of them don't come out alive.
One of the 17 major fires in California, the Mendocino Complex, became the biggest in state history yesterday, eclipsing a previous record set only 8 months ago as hot, windy conditions fanned the blazes. The Mendocino Complex, made up of two fires, grew to nearly 300,000 acres, almost the size of Los Angeles, and is expected to burn for the rest of the month. The fires have also caused untold economic damage, especially near Yosemite National Park. Park spokesman Scott Gettiman.
It's certainly a huge impact for us in Yosemite. This is the time, as you mentioned, that we welcome the most visitors. This is literally the busiest time of the year. So it's had an impact to people, for example, that had campground reservations, unfortunately, had to get canceled.
The fires have killed 7 people, destroyed over 1,500 structures, and displaced tens of thousands of people over the past month. Well, after months of turnover and tumult in the White House, things seem to be settling down as President Trump surrounds himself with a group of men who are much like him. Jerry Seib, Washington editor at The Wall Street Journal, has written a piece about Trump's contemporaries and joins us now. Jerry, who exactly is in the innermost circle right now?
I think you can make a case that the most important people around the president are John Kelly, his chief of staff, John Bolton, his national security advisor, Larry Kudlow, his national economic council head, and Rudy Giuliani, who's not in the White House, but his outside legal counsel, but the man who's increasingly taking the lead in his conversations about the Robert Mueller special counsel probe on Russian involvement in 2016's campaign. And if you look at And that's a fairly recent assemblage of people. And if you look at them, and it does appear that the president is comfortable with them, you have four men who are like the president in age. He's 72. The ages of Kelly, Bolton, Kudlow, and Giuliani, respectively, are 68, 69, 70, and 74. So they're kind of contemporaries of his, both in terms of age and life experience. Not young men on the rise, but people kind of at the end of their career arc, so they don't have as much to prove. And they seem content as a group to let Trump be Trump, not to try to control him. And he, in return, seems comfortable with them. So while there are a lot of things that agitate the president, the team around him seems to be one thing he's now, and maybe for the first time since he's been president, really comfortable with.
Jerry, how has this staff differ from past staffs in the White House?
Well, you know, I think you had previously people who did try to kind of control Donald Trump to some extent. And I think one thing that we've all learned from watching is that he's not to be controlled. I mean, he is going to do what he's going to do. He is going to be Trump. And I think even John Kelly, his chief of staff, has gone through over the last year or so a kind of a metamorphosis on that front. He's gone from trying to control access to the president to determining who he's going to talk to and who he's not going to talk to, and maybe even attempting to control his Twitter habit. And I think he's abandoned all those things, and he's basically not trying to control Donald Trump, but to kind of channel his impulses and to worry about managing the staff below him, not the president above him. And so I think that's the overall lesson of the way the Trump White House works. And I think it should be noted, this is a significant, maybe even a radical change from the way White Houses normally work. To have a weak chief of staff in a decentralized system is unusual and hasn't worked out well in the past, but you have a president who kind of wants to be his own chief of staff, his own communications director, his own press secretary to some extent. And so he now has people around him who've kind of stepped aside and let him do that.
Jerry, are those other men also putting away some of their own feelings or their own stances on certain subjects to support the president?
Well, I think that's one of the interesting things about John Bolton and Larry Kudlow is that they do seem to be doing exactly that. I mean, they are implementing Trump policies that are at odds with what they seem to believe, or at least what they used to profess earlier in their careers. John Bolton's been a hardliner on Russia for years, if not decades, and has been very acerbic in his criticism of North Korea, yet he is busy helping the president implement policies in which he's working very hard to have a better relationship with Russia and to kind of make nice with the North Koreans in a diplomatic process.
Thanks, Jerry. Jerry Seib, Washington editor at The Wall Street Journal. It's 14 minutes after the hour. Jennifer Koshinka in for Gordon Deal along with Rasa Kay. Reminder, we can connect on social media, friend us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter with the username at This Morning Show. The legal pressures facing Michael Cohen are growing in a wide-ranging investigation of his personal business affairs and his work on behalf of his former client, President Trump. This morning's Mike Gavin has the story.
The Wall Street Journal reports that federal prosecutors in New York are examining whether Cohen committed tax fraud. They are assessing whether Cohen's income from his taxi medallion business was underreported in federal tax returns. That income included hundreds of thousands of dollars received in cash and other payments over the last 5 years. Prosecutors are also looking into whether any bank employees improperly allowed Cohen to obtain loans for which he didn't provide adequate documentation. In particular, federal investigators are looking closely at Cohen's relationship with Sterling National Bank, which provided financing for Cohen's taxi medallion business, including whether Cohen inflated the value of any of his assets as collateral for loans. Jen?
Thanks, Mike. Federal prosecutors say convictions for federal tax and bank fraud may carry potentially significant prison sentences, which could put pressure on Cohen to cooperate with prosecutors if he's charged with those crimes. It's 20 minutes after the hour. Rasa Kay is here with more of America's First News.
Well, Jan, low visibility from wildfire smoke is causing flight and school delays out west. Parts of California and neighboring states now have some of the most hazardous air quality readings of anywhere in the world. In Southern California, Captain Tony Bomarito says the Holy Fire went from a spark to burning thousands of acres in a second.
That fuel hasn't burned for almost 40 years.
The National Weather Service says temperatures in Northern California could reach 110 degrees Fahrenheit over the next few days, making it easier for fire to spread. Elon Musk tweeted he wants to take Tesla private, that he's got the funding to buy the company at $420 a share. Axios reports it means Musk has quietly pulled a huge coup by securing enough financing to buy his company at a premium, or the SEC will consider the boastful tweet market manipulation, a form of securities fraud. Tesla stock was 11% higher at the close of trading. Two plainclothes detectives are recovering in a Camden, New Jersey hospital after an unprovoked attack on National Night Out, an event to bring local cops and citizens together. Camden County Police Chief Scott Thompson.
We had two officers that were in a non-enforcement plainclothes capacity in an unmarked vehicle sitting at a red light. The information we have thus far is that they were essentially ambushed.
Investigators are not ruling out mistaken identity in the attack. In Chicago, still reeling from a weekend of rampant gunfire, police are making what Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson calls a series of strategic deployments.
These additional deployments will continue to supplement existing manpower and will focus on our top-tier crime districts, including the five districts that have recently seen an uptick in violence.
An exotic tick that causes anemia in livestock is spreading across the eastern U.S. this summer. The Asian or longhorned tick has been found in Arkansas, Maryland, New Jersey, New York, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Virginia, and West Virginia, and no idea how it got to these shores. Health officials are urging people to cover up when heading out to wooded or very grassy areas. An analysis of over 500,000 heart attack cases over almost two decades finds women who have a heart attack are more likely to survive if they're treated by a female doctor. The research from Washington University in St. Louis finds women's chances in the hospital also improved if treated by a male doctor who's got a lot of female colleagues in his team.
Is this about compassion?
I just think there may be more flexible thinking about heart attack symptoms.
All right, sounds good. Interesting stuff.
Women do suffer heart attacks differently.
Yes. Thanks, Rasa. Coming up, how restaurant menus affect our orders. Letting us know exactly what we're eating may not be helping us too much. Market Watch's Jacob Passy has the results of a new study on calorie counts and joins us now. Jacob, what's the good news in this study?
The good news is that calorie counting menus do appear at certain types of restaurants to help diners, keep health in mind when choosing what they eat. But the bad news is that the effect of that is somewhat limited. So researchers from Cornell University and Louisiana State University basically ran this real-world experiment at two sit-down restaurants where they basically gave one set of diners a menu without calorie counts and another set of diners a menu with calorie counts. And those who knew how many calories each of the food items contained, they ate about 45 fewer calories per meal, or 3% fewer. So they were eating fewer calories, but that doesn't add up to a whole lot. The researchers calculated it, and that equates to only losing about 1 pound over the span of 3 years. So the effects are somewhat limited.
Jacob, your research also found that by the time diners got to dessert, sometimes they just gave up.
Yeah, so the researchers looked at, where diners were cutting the calories, and what their research found was that diners were choosing to eat fewer calories with their appetizers and entree courses, but they consumed the same number of calories at dessert and with drinks other than, you know, diet drinks and water. So what that kind of says is, for starters, you know, maybe diners just like to splurge. You know, they think, oh, I ate a salad instead of, you know, that really great soup, so I can have a few more calories and get that chocolate cake. Or it means that diners face decision fatigue. You know, researchers were saying that, you know, basically, you know, you're doing all this math, all this calculating throughout the meal that, you know, by the time the dessert menu comes, you may just, you know, to go to your default of what you like to eat for dessert without considering the health ramifications.
Another factor in play seems to be how the menu is designed. That was an interesting one.
Yeah, so menu design really does influence how people make their decisions as to what they're going to eat. So there have been studies that have shown that, you know, when restaurants updated their menus to include more flowery language, you know, instead of just saying red beans and rice, referring to it as Cajun red beans and rice, diners were more likely to choose those menu options with the more descriptive language. And so that is a way that restaurants can guide you towards certain menu items.
Thanks, Jacob. Jacob Passy of MarketWatch. It's 30 minutes after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
There's nothing small about your business. Your passion, your hours, your reputation, it's all huge. Your partnerships, even bigger. With Dell Small Business Technology Advisors, you'll get the tech, advice, and one-on-one partnership to help your business grow. Because with reliable Dell PCs with Intel Core processors, you can focus on what matters most, getting business done. Call 877-BUY-DELL to speak with an advisor today. That's 877-BUY-DELL.
When a state ranks among the top 10 in the country for major new and expanded facilities, that's pure growth. When it's tops for four straight years, that's pure Michigan. Long known as a world leader in the automotive industry, Michigan is also a leader in advanced manufacturing, cybersecurity, agribusiness, and aerospace. In fact, CNBC rates Michigan as the most improved state for business. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
On this Wednesday, August 8th, I'm Jennifer Kashinka in for Gordon Deal, along with Ross Akay. Some of our top stories and headlines: a race in Ohio between Republican Troy Balderson and Democrat Danny O'Connor, too close to call. The ACLU is suing the Trump administration for denying asylum to those fleeing domestic and gang violence. Missouri voters overturn a right-to-work measure rejecting Republican lawmakers. The NBA reveals its Christmas Day matchups, which includes Lakers versus Warriors, and borrowing a cat to join your lasagna dinner party. That story in about 20 minutes. We're coming to you live from the Dell Studios. Dell Small Business Technology Advisors know there's nothing small about your business. They provide one-on-one partnership and reliable Dell PCs with Intel Core processors to get business done. The NFL has imposed a new helmet rule aimed at protecting players by discouraging them from leading with their helmets. So far, it's been met with some opposition and confusion. Andrew Beaton of the Wall Street Journal is here with the story. Andrew, what does the new rule say?
So the new rule essentially discourages players from using their helmet as a weapon. And we've seen lots of steps over the years where the NFL has tried to discourage this. They've enforced tough penalties on helmet-to-helmet contact. But this rule penalizes players for lowering their heads to make contact with an opponent in any part of their body. So if a defender goes in leading with his head and hits a player hard in the torso, in the knees, then that is now a penalty. And theoretically, it can be applied to offense or defense, where sometimes you might see an offensive player really leading with his head, and that sometimes draws in a dangerous situation. So they're really trying to take this out of the game, but it's also sort of something that's been part of the game for a long time.
Andrew, is it similar to the college targeting rule?
So this has one similarity to the college targeting rule, which is, if you're not familiar with the college targeting rule, it allows for the ejection of a player who makes a dangerous play such as this. And if it's rule ruled targeting in college, the player is automatically ejected for the game. Now, the NFL has implemented something where the player can be ejected based on certain criteria, whether or not it was avoidable. But unlike in college, it's not an automatic ejection. But that's a big step and something that they hope discourages players from doing this.
Andrew, why did the NFL think this necessary now?
Well, we've seen over the years that safety has been a big concern for the league, and they've taken various measures over the years. They've instituted stronger protocols for identifying concussions. They have implemented it. They've lots of research to try and figure out how to make the game safer. But there's only so much you can do on the fringes without fundamentally changing the way the game is played. Because last year they had a record number of concussions, at least recorded concussions. And their point on that isn't necessarily that concussions are up, so to speak, but the fact that many more are being identified. And so at a certain point, to try and lower this number to make the game safer, you have to change the way the game is played. And that's also what makes this change so controversial, because it's not just helping. It's not a piece of new equipment to make things safer. It's not putting more doctors on the sidelines to better treat things. It's fundamentally changing the way football is played.
We're speaking with Andrew Beaton of the Wall Street Journal. Andrew, defensive players, especially recently, have been complaining about all the rule changes, saying it's really taken away from the game and punishes them much more than offensive players. Have they been angry about this particular rule?
A lot of them have been, because first of all, there's some confusion, right? With any new rule, there's a question of how will this be enforced, how will it be implemented, and you don't really know that until you actually have some games. And we've only had one preseason game to check this out so far. But in a broader level, a lot of people have said this is how we've been tackling for years. This is part of football, and the general gist is you can't take the football out of football. And that's at least the gist of the naysayers. And it's this strange situation where the same people the league is trying to protect and make safer are also griping about the situation.
Andrew, is it possible it will kind of be overcalled in preseason games while the refs kind of work out the new rules, and then when the regular season gets underway, that it'll be scaled back and everyone will understand it a little bit more?
I think that's what a lot of people who are concerned with the rule are hoping for, that in the first preseason game, we saw two penalties called on the Ravens for this, and a lot of people are like, man, how can that be a penalty that looks like a normal football tackle? So one way of looking at it is that this is the future, and that this is how they're making the game safer, and they need to change the game to make it safer, and that these types of plays are going to be called like that forever. On the other hand, there's a chance that they're also really making this a point of emphasis in the preseason to get a message across that they really want to discourage this type of play, and only the more severe ones, the more obvious ones, would be called during the regular season.
Andrew Beaton of the Wall Street Journal. It's 20 minutes before the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Jennifer Kashinka in for Gordon Deal along with Ross Akay. It's time now to go beyond the headlines. This morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories he'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, it's that time of year again. Time for fantasy football drafts, and also time to punish those unfortunate souls who came in last place during last year's fantasy season. The latest, a Texas man who came in last in his league, ended up going viral this week when he faced his punishment, wearing a dress on a street corner. Witnesses captured video Sunday showing a man in a red dress standing on a Mont Bellevue street corner near Barbers Hill High School and holding a sign reading, "No money needed, I just suck at fantasy football." And while that might seem like an embarrassing way for the young man to spend an afternoon, at least the shaming is only temporary, unlike the 22-year-old Tuscaloosa, Alabama man who may have endured the cruelest punishment of all when he came in last, having infamous basketball dad LeVar Ball's face tattooed on his leg, reminding him every day for the rest of his life of his fantasy football futility.
What does LeVar Ball have to do with the fantasy draft in football?
Yeah, I have no idea, but that is definitely not a league that I want any part of.
You came in close to the top of your league, right?
No, not in football. That's the thing. I would never, ever be in one of these leagues where you had to do something really
you
bad.
You wouldn't wear a dress on the street corner.
Well, I would have to. There'd be videos of me everywhere doing all kinds of crazy stuff because I come in last or near last in football. I'm decent in baseball. Football, almost every year I come close
to last, if
all
not
right.
last. Yeah.
Okay.
So, no, luckily my league does not levy
so
such punishments.
I won't see any tattoos on you.
No, okay. Not anytime soon.
All right.
Maybe for other things. And you may be familiar, Jen, with the philosophy, go big or go home. Well, a British tourist visiting Dubai certainly did that recently when he collected $45,000 worth of speeding tickets in just 4 hours. Fox News says traffic cameras caught the 25-year-old breaking the speed limit 33 times on July 31st in a rented yellow Lamborghini at speeds ranging from 78 to 142 miles per hour. Local news reports say the yellow supercar is now sitting in front of the man's hotel collecting dust. The rental agency is refusing to pick it up because it will have to turn it over to police and, per local regulations, will be responsible for the man's fines. Luckily, the agency currently has the man's passport, which was left as collateral, and they are hoping to resolve the matter before he leaves the country.
So, the people stopping him, they didn't take away his license or do anything
I guess this was
12, 13, or 14.
I guess
33 times?
I guess this was all from traffic cameras. I guess he was never pulled over, but I guess they have lots and lots of traffic cameras in Dubai, and they enforce those laws. $45,000 in 4 hours.
Well, the guy's nuts.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you're going to rent a yellow Lamborghini, like we said, go big or go home.
Just drive in one straight line for a really, really, really long time and get away from the cameras instead of going back and forth.
Yes, perhaps a little drive out in the country would be a little better than sticking to the city, right?
Yeah, thanks, Mike. It's 13 minutes before the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Gordon Deal with a little time off. Jennifer Kashinka in along with Ross Sakay. Thanks for spending part of your morning with us. The tick-borne illness Lyme disease has now been detected in all 50 states, and cases continue to rise. A report from Quest Diagnostics, based on more than 6 million blood tests taken over the last 7 years, finds that cases of Lyme disease have exploded in areas like California and Florida, where it was not commonly seen in the past. The company believes ticks are finding it easier to survive in new regions and spreading diseases to unsuspecting residents. Researchers hypothesize that the significant rates of increase may reinforce other research suggesting changing climate conditions that allow ticks to live longer and in more regions may factor into disease risk. Disease-carrying ticks are normally found in the Northeast, and cases in those areas are still climbing as well. Tick bites that infect victims with the bacteria that causes Lyme typically leave a bullseye-shaped rash at the infection site. Other symptoms include joint pain, weakness in the limbs, and fatigue. It's 9 minutes before the hour. Rasa Kay is here with more of America's First News.
Well, Jen, Paul Manafort's legal team today continues attacking star witness Rick Gates' credibility. Day six of Manafort's trial on banks fraud and tax evasion. The two former business partners were indicted last October for hiding millions of dollars they made lobbying for Russian-backed Ukrainian politicians. Gates has testified Manafort ordered him to commit fraud. New Fiat Chrysler CEO Michael Manley and outgoing PepsiCo CEO Indra Nooyi were among the 12 captains of industry President Trump hosted for a dinner at his private golf club in New Jersey last night to get their views of the economy and what their priorities and thoughts are for the year ahead. Trump used the occasion to announce an aid package to fight the relentless wildfires out west.
We send our love and support and prayers to the families of those who have lost loved ones. They've never seen anything like it, what's happening.
The Mendocino Complex fire is now the largest wildfire in California history, nearly the size of L.A. A school district is pushing its school year start date back at least a day because of the smoke. In Ohio, a special election in the deep red 12th district, Republican Troy Balderson has a slight lead, but Democrat Danny O'Connor has not conceded the race. Balderson thanked his biggest supporter, President Trump, who tweeted that Balderson had won.
Danny O'Connor ran a hard race, and I look forward to campaigning against him again this fall.
Voters in Missouri have overwhelmingly rejected a right-to-work law passed by the state's Republican-controlled legislature that would have banned compulsory union fees. Organized labor spent millions of dollars to defeat the measure it claims would drive down wages. The remains of a young boy have been found at a remote desert compound in New Mexico. Police had originally raided the compound in search of a missing 4-year-old boy. That boy's father, Siraj Wahaj, was arrested, and 11 malnourished children were rescued. Taos County Sheriff Jerry Hogreff.
An occupant of the compound or somebody with great knowledge of the compound sent a message saying basically that we are starving and the children are starving.
Another man and three women who police say seem to have been brainwashed by the men were also arrested. Well, maybe you've seen a mailbox library. Thousands of them have been popping up all over the country on public or private property, a small repository of books people can borrow and return at will. Well, a week after a Point Pleasant, New Jersey family put one up, someone called the police about it. After getting all kinds of praise from local teachers and most neighbors, seems one of them decided it was a traffic hazard. So the little Boo. Free library will now have to be moved back Boo. A few feet.
Boo.
I've seen the libraries on wheels, like the buses, but I haven't seen these yet. Have you?
Oh, yeah. Sometimes in like a small park. And the designs are different and kind of creative.
I'll have to look for them.
They're cute.
Thanks, Rossick. No, not a cup of sugar or a baking pan. One Oklahoma woman wants to borrow a more unusual item for her dinner party, an orange cat. Claire Edwards posted a wanted ad on social media asking to borrow an orange-colored feline to have a lasagna dinner with her Garfield-loving 4-year-old and 2-year-old children. Edwards, who described herself as an increasingly desperate but not crazy mom of two with no friends who own orange cats, says she's not looking to adopt the cat. Instead, she's asking to take temporary custody for 2 days, tops. Clara's husband says his wife initially posted the flyer on Craigslist and Instagram before it eventually made its way to Twitter. According to the flyer, the kitty will be returned to its rightful owner, happy and cared for, and won't be required to eat lasagna. Clara's husband announced on Twitter they had found a perfect Garfield lookalike to join them on Saturday. It will be a family affair, as the cat's owner and boyfriend have been asked to join the lasagna pizza party. That'll do it for this hour. For Rossa Kay, I'm Jennifer Kishinka. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.